Welcome to the NoSillaCast for May 23rd, 2005. I'm podcasting again from the Wall Street Journal-sponsored conference D3, All Things Digital. Today was a full day with Bill Gates, Scott McNeely, Ed Zander, Nicholas Negroponte, and Mitch Kapoor. I'll try to keep this under 20 minutes and give just the highlights. Bill Gates was the first speaker, and if you listen to last night's podcast, you'll know that Bill had to sit through Steve Jobs' keynote and have the cameras watching him while Steve made snide remarks. Today, Bill was in good form, and he was interviewed by Walter Mossberg. Walt had to start off by asking about security, kind of an obvious place to start. Oddly, Bill sees that the spam filters from Microsoft are doing a good job at reducing spam. Wasn't clear to me what filters he was referring to. Maybe this is in the Exchange server he's talking about. He said that viruses are down in the last year. I had to wonder, has he actually been counting? Certainly didn't believe they were down. And then he put a caveat on that statement by saying that viruses are down in terms of the damage it has done to people. And I guess I see his point that there haven't been, you know, real destructive viruses in terms of, you know, erasing hard disks and that sort of thing. But he must not count the damage to industry and to our home lives, for that matter, of the money and time wasted doing patch management, virus updates, and cleaning off of the junk that gets on there. He claims that if you had kept your OS up to date with automatic updates, you shouldn't have gotten any viruses in the last year. He said that malware, his term for spyware and adware combined, is up, but Microsoft's acquisition of Giant and subsequently giving away the malware scanner software for free has helped to keep these problems off of computers. He talked about a new way to protect customers from malicious code, which he called reputation-based downloads. The idea is that when you download a piece of software, you'll be asked later how that experience went for you, and you give a rating to say whether it was good software or bad. He said that a surprising number of people will respond to these mini surveys, and he seemed to talk like it had already been done to some extent, and that they had experience in it, that people do respond to the surveys, and that it'll be a way of knowing right before you download whether this software could cause problems for you. They think this will be more effective than putting the "Are you sure?" button that we all instinctively push, and more effective than Apple's requirement to enter the administrative password. He's got a point on that to some extent, but I think he missed the point where with the requirement of a password, you eliminate the installation of software without your knowledge, not just the software that you're doing on purpose, but those things that get installed without your knowledge. That simply can't happen on the Mac, or at least as easily, because of the requirement to put in the administrative password. This reputation-based model might still be something interesting to watch over time. Walter was skeptical after Bill had talked about how nobody should have gotten a virus in the last year and that the problems are getting better or getting smaller. He said so many people have to get their hard drives reformatted, even if they have firewalls, antivirus programs, and Microsoft's malware program. And now we have all these warnings jumping up and alerting us. He said, when can we just sit down and work at the computer and not worry about it? Bill says that if you opt into the malware program and automatically install Windows, it is silent. Didn't seem very silent to me, but there I am being skeptical again. He said that they will be getting into the antivirus business, and since industry has set a precedent for charging for antivirus, Microsoft will too. This triggered an angry question from the audience later on. The gentleman asked, why, after causing billions of dollars in damage to customers, can they stand to profit from security software? Bill defended his position by pointing out that they don't charge for malware protection or search. I don't think that appeased the people in the room. Walt asked if there's a divergence between when corporations and individuals want to upgrade the operating system, implying that perhaps they would like it a little sooner than 5 years apart, and maybe some people would like it sooner. Bill said that everyone wants the small updates, but any changes to the user interface must come with dramatic changes to the scope of the tools, graphics, or power to understand documents if large corporations are going to change to go along with the user interface. There has to be a compelling reason for the change. Bill talked about the tablet PC quite a bit. He believes it is the great new thing, that there are rabid users in healthcare and places like that. He also said the use of OneNote has dramatically increased his own productivity. He demoed desktop search, and it looked surprisingly like Spotlight in Mac OS X Tiger, except maybe even better. The panes of information were the same, but where Tiger only does previews of JPEGs, Microsoft's product shows previews of a lot of different document formats. For example, he clicked on a small icon of a PowerPoint slide that the search had brought up, and he was able to click through the slides as though he were in PowerPoint. He was able to just click through each of the slides, which is significantly more advanced than what you can do on OS X. He also demonstrated their web search service. I think he called it Start. That's what it said at the page. It looked pretty good. The attraction was that you start with a blank page instead of ready-made content like Yahoo, and you add the content which interests you. And it was fairly simple. He was able to just click around, click and point, and that sort of thing. He showed he added weather, stock quotes, podcasts. The funny thing, though, was he kept referring to it as the dashboard, which is the name for the new OS X Tiger's widget scheme that they just came out with. So he even corrected himself, said, oh, I got to quit calling it that, and then he turned around and called it again. Finally, he showed off their mapping site, which wasn't that good. It looked a little worse in terms of graphics than Yahoo and nowhere near as Google Maps. But then he showed something pretty cool. He brought up an address, which, by the way, was Walter Mossberg's home address, including his home phone number, and which he left on screen for quite a long time. And then he showed the satellite view, as many services show. But then he showed a hybrid view, which allowed him to overlay the street names and the lines for the streets on top of the satellite view. It was pretty nice. It looked pretty good. It was kind of an intriguing way to see the whole picture. Then he explained that they also bought a company called Pictometry, which has been flying around with cameras at 45-degree angles, photographing everything in the country. So soon you'll be able to see Walter's house, not from the rooftop view, but from the side view as well. Next up was Scott McNeely, the CEO of Sun Microsystems. This was kind of an interesting thing to see him up there because Kara Swisher was interviewing him, and she showed videos from last year of the other CEOs from last year talking about Sun. Larry Ellison made fun. Larry Ellison from Oracle made fun of Scott, and Bill Gates gave some jibes at him. But most notably, Carly Fiorina, who was the CEO of Hewlett-Packard, was talking with almost pity at the time about how Scott McNeely just doesn't get it, how he just didn't see the writing on the wall and didn't know what he was doing. And of course that was ironic because Carly Fiorina was fired from HP since then and Scott is still hanging on. He says he looks at Dell as an AutoZone and HP as a car dealer, where AutoZone will assemble things for you, sell somebody else's goods, and HP will sell their own stuff, but they don't actually build any of the things that are in them. They don't build their own components or the middleware. Throughout his talk, he used a lot of car analogies, and that got kind of funny. He's kind of a junkyard dog speaker. He talked extensively about the fact that Sun has $7.5 billion in cash in the bank, partly thanks to the $2 billion he got from Microsoft. He talked about the fact that on Friday the 13th of May, Sun and Microsoft announced several collaboration efforts. The ones I could follow were, first of all, was single sign-on, and it was a way to bring together both the LDAP and Active Directory environments together with Java. That's kind of a complicated way of talking about something we all deal with, where we have lots and lots of passwords, and it would be a lot easier if we just get in with one password and not have to put sticky notes around our computers that are insecure. He said they also certified all of their x86 machines to run under Windows, which was something they didn't have before. They ran, but they weren't certified. And he talked a lot about their acquisition of Tarantella, which will make it easier for their Sunray Thin clients to serve up Windows applications using licensed remote desktop protocol, or RDP. That's something we definitely need to learn more about. Kara asked how friendly Microsoft and Sun are now. Scott said that the agreements are all around interoperability. He said they're not friends, but they're not biting each other's ears off when they're wrestling anymore. Kara mentioned how the stock price is languishing, and Scott pointed out that they have 16 years straight of cash flow positive years, and mentioned again that they have $7.5 billion in cash in the bank. He then talked about how every CIO who didn't get a job at a computer company has built themselves a data center. He says they're all homemade jalopies. See the car reference again? He said he goes into all these data centers. He says, I've probably seen more data centers than anybody else has, and I've never seen two that are the same. He says they're all hodgepodge put together from all different components. He said, if you buying a Dell server is to providing web services as buying a piston ring is to transportation. He took the analogy a little further. He said, if I brought you 262 parts to build an SUV and drop them on the floor of your garage for only $250, would that be a good deal? Makes me think about our data centers. He said that one of their business he calls multi-tenant processing grid. This is where they sell CPU cycles for running Monte Carlo analysis or oil exploration software, things like that. They're allowing people to rent CPU cycles running on Opterons and AntSparks running Red Hat, Linux, and Solaris. They are selling these cycles for $1 per CPU hour. In contrast, he pointed out that IBM's pension costs alone are more than $1 an hour, so they can't possibly compete with Sun on this. He says he looks at it like unused airplane seats. If he doesn't sell them, they go away, and he can't store them. You can't put them away and sell them tomorrow. He also says he treats their grid as work in progress, or WIP, because, and I love this line, he said, this kind of equipment has the shelf life of a banana. Scott then talked about their new Niagara chip. It's the next generation past the RISC architecture, which has chip multi-threading. This chip that he had whipped out of his pocket has 8 cores and 4 hardware cores per thread. It is a bandwidth of an E15K, which is their highest-end million-dollar server, has networking built in, full symmetric multiprocessing on a chip. He's really interested in bringing down the total cost of ownership, and he really focused on everything that you have to pay for in computing. And he didn't really talk about the labor aspect too much, but he talked about power. And he pointed out that this chip is a 32-way, 64-bit core, and it takes up less than 56 watts. He pointed out that Eric Schmidt, CEO of Google, his biggest single expense is energy costs, and his second is floor space. So this certainly could be attractive for somebody like him. And I guess we should all be thinking about that. He brought up another grid. He calls this one the display grid, which is his term for the Sunray Thin clients. He said, wouldn't it be great to have $1 a display per day for all your desktop services? And he says you can do that with the Sunrays. He said over half his employees are homeless. They can walk in any office and work, so he saves $3 million a year by not having a Wintel space heater for each one of them. Got his digs in all the way through. He referred to one weekend recently where they used 2 system administrators and $65,000 in software to move 30,000 people to a new software upgrade. Did it over the weekend and didn't have any disruption in service. The next speaker was very, very interesting. His name is Nicholas Negroponte. He's the chairman of the Media Lab and professor of media technology at MIT. He's dedicating his efforts to finding a way to get laptops in the hands of children in developing countries. His strategy is that if he could build a laptop for $100, he could get them into the hands of millions of children by 2007. He's worked with school children in Costa Rica where there isn't even electricity. He said the teachers try to do well, but they only have 6 or 7 years of education themselves. He brought in satellite dishes and generators and laptops he bought off of eBay, gave one to every single child, and let them take them home. He said the families loved them because they were the brightest light in the house. How sad is that? The kids took wonderful care of them, polishing them like bicycles, making little bags for them, and really, really cared for them. And he said one of the problems with these teachers is that they supposedly are teaching English, but he said it's absolutely unintelligible. You couldn't even tell that it was English. And these kids found a website on their own that would speak English words to them, would pronounce the words, so they could learn to speak the language. A heck of a lot better than the teachers were doing. The technology path to get to a $100 laptop has 3 generations. He kind of did it backwards. He talked about the furthest generation out first. He said Generation 3 is going to use media ink. It's a method of actually printing on the screen, and it has really, really high contrast, so it's very clear, and it can be done on a flexible, non-breakable screen, maybe even one you could roll up in your pocket. These screens can be made for about 50 cents a square inch, where, in contrast, LCDs cost $10 per diagonal inch. He said that the standard laptop today, 50% of the cost is in the LCD, and... 50% of the cost of the entire laptop is marketing and sales, and of the 50% that's left, half of that was for the LCDs. So I guess it's about 25% of the cost of the laptop is LCDs. The second generation, moving closer to time now, will be a laptop that when it opened reveals a small LED projector. Then the screen could even be made of white cardboard. He's picturing these LEDs that would just point right at this screen, and since the LEDs have low energy requirements, that would certainly help. And you could even open the laptop all the way open flat so that the projector could point at a wall. He said they originally had the idea of doing a rear projection, and he actually had a little mock-up there where he opened it up, and the front of the screen kind of came towards you and opened up into a triangular piece. It's kind of hard to describe, but the projector was inside. But he said it turns out it works a lot better if it's actually in the front. I started wondering whether that would break off pretty easily. That's what I'd worry about, but I suppose he's probably thought of that. The first generation is actually harder. They're looking at something that's the most up-to-date, the most recent, the earliest thing they're going to do. He said they're looking at taking something like the 7.2-inch DVD players you can buy now for around $110, gutting them and taking out the optical drive, and then put in a processor and a keyboard. They'll be sure to put in Wi-Fi, 4 USB ports, a 500 MHz processor, a gigabyte of flash memory, but no disk, just flash memory. 128 megabytes of RAM and run them under Linux. He was asked whether they would want to run OpenOffice or any other operating system, and he said the developing world doesn't want to talk about any other operating system other than Linux. He said the kids want to run Logo, Google, and Skype. They don't want to run any kind of Office applications at all. It was a pretty interesting endeavor, and I enjoyed listening to him. Smart guy. Finally, Ed Zander, who was he is the CEO of Motorola. He was at one time the COO of Sun Microsystems as well. I didn't take a lot of notes on Ed, but he did kind of accidentally show us the Motorola iTunes phone. It was white, and he said it had an iTunes interface and killer sound. He sort of flashed it a little bit, and the photographer tried to get a picture, and he went, "Oh my God, did you take a picture of that?" And Walter stopped him. I tried to sneak a couple of pictures. I don't know if I got anything good, but we'll see. He even treated us to a Neil Diamond song by holding it up to his microphone, to his lavalier microphone. And he said that he had asked them for Neil Young, and through the translation of all the people who worked for him, by the time it got to him, it was Neil Diamond. He said he still liked Neil Diamond. But he emphasized the sound in all of their phones, and he showed off the Razr, and he kept calling them iconic devices. So I think like the iPod is an iconic device, and he wants to coin that phrase, I think. So he referred to the Razr as an iconic device, and he tried to bring up the StarTAC, but Walter Mossberg pointed out that was a very long time ago, and he shouldn't be still hanging on that one. But he did also show an even thinner phone. It wasn't a flip phone, but it was called the Sliver, which is 12 millimeters thick, and it has a speaker and a camera in it. He also showed off full motion video of CNN on a cell phone now available through Verizon. The rest of it was more talk about all different kinds of cell phones, and I got bored and didn't write it down. The Mitch Kapoor came on at the very end, and he was talking on behalf of the Open Software Foundation. What he demonstrated wasn't that exciting, but I promised you I'd tell you about it. Basically, what they're trying to do is come up with a calendaring system that you can publish to the web, an open source application, obviously, that it's going to run under Linux, Windows, and the Mac operating system. He did talk about what a bunch of grief it is trying to develop for all three platforms at the same time, but he showed how he was able to create these calendars on a PC and publish it, and it would show up changed on the Macintosh, and he flipped back and forth between the two of them. Looked a lot like Apple's iCal or the Microsoft's calendaring program. Not any great dramatic increase in coolness, but the fact that they were all talking together was, I guess, the exciting part of what they were doing. Well, that's it for today's NoSillaCast. I thank you for tuning in. I'm not sure if I'll podcast tomorrow. The agenda looks a little bit light, but you never know.